The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome, and good morning. Thank you so much for being here. In other news, police have reportedly arrested a Jackson, Michigan transgender and gay rights activist for allegedly burning down his own home. Authorities accuse Nikki Jolly, who organized a series of pro-LGBTQ events and initiatives in the socially conservative town, of intentionally setting fire to their own residence in 2017. The Detroit News reported Monday five pets perished in the inferno, and the FBI investigated the incident as a hate crime, given that Jolly had allegedly received threats prior to the fire. But a police report indicates that Jolly was looking for further publicity in advancing his cause. The arrest has shocked heads of both sides of the LGBTQ rights issue, especially in the wake of actor Jesse Smollett being accused of staging his own hate crime in order to promote his career. Jolly had been celebrated in the local LGBTQ community for helping build a gay community center, organizing a gay pride parade, and advocating for a municipal ordinance forbidding discrimination based on sexual orientation. Jolly was even named Citizen of the Year. Police are investigating the charge, offered a possible motive, according to the police report referenced by the news. Two members of the St. John's United Church of Christ, where the gay community center is located, believe that Jolly was anxious to generate more news about LGBTQ rights. Barbara Shelton and Bobby James said Jolly was visibly disappointed that the 2017 Jackson Pride Parade and Festival did not generate more publicity, good or bad. According to Metro News, investigator Aaron Grove, who interrogated Shelton and James, said the pair described Jolly as very deceptive and possessing layers of manipulation. Jolly had just been married before the fire and was a recipient of $58,000 in fundraising from supporters. You know, one thing when you're an activist, when things go quiet, doesn't matter. Good or bad publicity is what you need.
Yeah, you got to make some noise.
We have often stated before on many of these issues to the left, they don't want the issue to ever be solved.
Well, no, because if you don't have a something, if you don't have some kind of crisis, then what is there?
Well, you know, you think about it, by the activists out there, you would think that you have in this country rabid hate crimes being committed, racist and homophobic hate crimes. Mm-hmm. And that's not happening.
No, it's not.
Most people are live and let live.
Mm-hmm.
They may disagree with you. They may disagree with your lifestyle. People disagree with everybody on what different people do. Let's check out parents and what their kids do, and how disapproving they are of everything that they're, of many things, not everything, but many things that their kids do. May still love them. I've said this for the longest time. You can't find a more tolerant nation than the United States of America. Why? And I'm talking about the people, not the manufactured industry of promoting racial hatred and other types of hatred that exist out there. And it's because we are such a great melting pot, and because we have gone through our stages in this country of all sorts of hatred. But now it's coming to the point, as we have stated before, that you've got to keep the issue on the top burner. And if there aren't these hate crimes that you can publicize every single day, then you have to start manufacturing new stuff in order to push forth your narrative.
You have to create a new oppressor.
That's the reality. Yeah, you're right. That's the reality of the activist. And that's the other thing, too. You know, you think about it. So when you can't get it, what do you do? And we've talked about the Democrat Party and the left out there in this country, which every single day has to create a bigger pie of victims, which then creates a bigger pie of oppression and oppressors that exist out there, to the point now they're going after their own.
Right.
Now who are the oppressors? Think about this now. Think about who is one of the oppressors now of the LGBTQ? Who this week and last week is the biggest oppressor? Martina Navratilova.
Far right wing.
Think about that. That's where it has gone. It has gone to the point where now it's time to marginalize Martina Navratilova. Who else is being marginalized this past week? Liberals that you would never would think, right? Dianne Feinstein. Can you believe it?
The gang of 8-year-olds.
The gang of 8-year-olds. I still like that one. She was crude. She was mean. She was rude to the 8-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And
if you don't have an oppressor, they'll point to others. You know, when they have an oppressor like, well, a lesbian who was on the Baltimore Mayor's Commission, Human Rights Commission, and they had her removed for violent behavior because she called a man a man. And it turns out...
A rapist.
A man that says he was a woman so that he could be put into a woman's prison.
And commit rapes.
And he committed rapes. The rapist isn't the bad guy. She is. So then what happens when you run out of oppressors in your own, you know, little circle? You got to make some up. Well, how can we do that? I know. I'll burn down my own house. I know. I'll hire a couple of guys to make it look like I got beat up on the street.
The left is facing one of the worst crises ever.
They're out of oppressors.
Well, they're finding out that most people don't hate them.
Right.
They may disagree with them. They don't hate them. They don't commit acts of violence. That nothing could be worse to the left than that happening.
It's to actually live in a world without oppressors, that people aren't coming after you. It's the only thing you have is people that disagree with you.
Well, now I like this because I've seen this in the last just a couple of weeks. Well, the silence is oppression of itself. Well, you know why? Because, well, people just don't care. Well, that's oppression. No, they just don't care. Actually, that's what you want. You actually want people to go, I don't care. Do whatever you want to do. Just don't step on my toes. Mm. Do whatever you want to do. Don't step on my... Really, that's what the American people are like. That's mm-hmm. That's 99.9% of the American people. Just leave me alone. I don't care what you do. Whatever you want to do, I could care less. Just don't make me... Don't force me to have your beliefs. Oh, well, you must have my beliefs. Otherwise, you're hating. No, I just don't care. You must care. Not caring is hate. Now the oppressor is those that are silent and say, well, I just don't care what you do. You must care what I do, and you must champion what I do. No, I don't. Well, then you're hateful. Really now?
No, that's exactly where we are.
Well, do you agree with me? No, I disagree with you, but you can do what you want to do. No, you must agree with me. If you don't agree with my lifestyle, then you are full of hatred. No, I'm not. I just disagree with you. I think you're wrong. I don't hate you. I'm not going to hit you. I may disagree with you publicly, but I don't hate you. I'm not going to hit you. And honestly, unless the only reason I'm involved in this conversation is because you are attempting to coerce me through government to agree with you, otherwise I will be punished. Well, sorry, that goes too far. You can't go that far. And so there's where we are. But the goalposts really have moved to the point of, silence is oppression. No, it's not.
No.
Salins meal, I can say, I don't care. You must champion that my lifestyle is correct and moral. No, I don't. I can say it's absolutely wrong. You're promoting violence. I am not. I'm simply saying you're wrong. Many people tell me I'm wrong. I don't accuse them of promoting violence. Well, you're promoting violence. You've said Gary McNamara is wrong. And somebody may take that the wrong way. Well, that's the way life goes. Some people take everything the wrong way. You can't change it. You don't stop freedom of speech, and you don't change people's opinions because of the fact that somebody might take it the wrong way. You don't live in the real world. That's the real world.
So. Well, that's it. I mean, you have to create, you have to make the rest of the world believe that you have a number of oppressors at your door every single day.
And that's not talking about why is this happening. It's happening because, again, they don't think about this. They don't feel the hate. That's what activists said.
Right.
They don't feel the hate.
Yep.
They don't feel the hate out there, and therefore, since they don't feel the hate, they've got to create the hate because they know their allies, if they smell that there's hatred out there, they'll be jumping all over it.
And but if you've been conditioned all your life to believe that the world, essentially, there are oppressors at your door and will be forever, then you wake up one day and there's not one, and then all of a sudden the next day there's not one, and then all of a sudden the next day, still no oppressor. Well, then I'm going to have to manufacture one. It's one thing to wake up and look for an oppressor or a reason to be a victim every day.
It's
something else to just make them up out of thin air, your oppressors of the world.
Can I repeat it again? Think about this. This last week of February 2019. For a second, I went, what's the year? The number one oppressor this week of LGBTQ community is Martina Navratilova. Absorb that one, will you? The number one enemy this past week.
Yep.
Martina Navratilova. That shows you how far it's gone. She is the new oppressor of the LGBTQ community.
Right. How dare she involve critical thinking?
Does anybody really buy that? No. But that's how far they have to go to find victims and therefore oppressors. To the point of what? Insanity. 866-90-RED-EYE.
You may not be able to predict blizzards and ice storms, but you can prepare your truck to handle them. Make sure your truck is prepared for any last-minute winter storms by maintaining your air brake system regularly. Watch for water or moisture in your air brake system. Water is an expected byproduct of the condensed air that travels through your air brake system. When temperatures drop below freezing, any moisture in your brake system will freeze and restrict or prevent airflow within the system. To help prevent this from happening, drain your air tanks daily to reduce the amount of moisture entering the rest of the system. You should also replace the air dryer filter as recommended by the manufacturer. Lastly, make sure your brake components are properly greased, as this can also help combat moisture. If you're not comfortable or confident monitoring your own brake system, stop into a TA Truck Service today and let one of our expert technicians help.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. All right, let's get to some calls. We go to John in San Diego. John, hi, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, John.
Hey there. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Thank you. You guys keep me up late at night, so thank you for the insomnia. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. What's up?
So I called in with the topic that I don't actually believe that there is that much support for AOC. I'm about to be turning 37, and I don't see it amongst my generation. I don't see it amongst Zoomers. I don't see it amongst Boomers. There is just no amount of support for her because they really do see that she is legitimately crazy and uninformed. Are you guys with me on this?
I mean, Gary said it earlier, and maybe you might have missed that part, John, where he said what we don't see is prominent Democrats and people on social media out there defending her. There are a number of people when you start talking about, you know, giveaways and doing this for people and doing that for people, or, you know, some of the populist ideas that have been around in the more modern days, I guess, of socialism here in the States. All that stuff is going to resonate with a certain group of people, and you'll get a certain reaction out of them. But in terms of people out there truly supporting her and her efforts, no, I don't get it. And so that begs the question, then why does the media do that? I mean, she's everywhere. I mean, she is the reporting
you
on her,
that one, right?
And she makes herself available, of course, to the media, and they'll take it if they believe, even if they believe it's a train wreck, they're going to take it. In fact, especially if they believe it's a train wreck, it doesn't have to be Fox News; it can be MSNBC. So, yeah, I don't know.
Let me tell you this poll that was done. All right, the insiders poll that was done. About a week and a half ago, the plurality of respondents, 43.7%, agreed with the Green New Deal proposal as a whole. 16% strongly agreed, 13% agreed, 13% somewhat agreed. Meanwhile, just 14.7% disagreed with it, and about 24.3% said that they didn't know enough to say. Now, that was early on. Now that was
West Hollywood and San Francisco.
The point is, when you say, are you for the new Green Deal, as the guy went out to talk to college students, they all said yes. When he brought up the three most important points, they all said, well, no, this is crazy. People are completely and totally not informed. They're ignorant.
Well,
they don't know.
Everybody says, I mean, no one steps up to a response to a pollster in this case, John, by saying, no, I don't want to save the planet. You know, no one's going to say that. Everyone's going to go, oh, yeah, I want to save the planet. Then you start asking them the details. But even within, you don't even have to go out to the pollsters or the respondents to any poll. You just talk to or listen to her comments. When she did her video, on that video, during her chili cook-off, she was talking about how there needs to be great urgency. And then later in the video, she talks about how this is not binding. It's a resolution only.
Well, look, 87.6% of those polls said it's important that the government invest directly in the high-speed rail system. They said the same thing in California, but they couldn't get it done from point A to point B. They agree with zero-emission vehicle infrastructure and clean public transit. They agree with all those things that sound great until they're told, you've got to give up your car, there'll be no more airplane flights. Well, no, you can't do that. That's crazy. We just think that you should care about these things and invest money until you start wasting the money, and then we don't wish you're going to do it. So what Americans say is, we like the pie in the sky if we don't know the details of it and if we are not impacted by it in any way.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for the call. And that's it. I mean, you know, say what you will about the efforts on GoFundMe, but you had a significant number of people that were willing to put their money where their mouth was when it came to the wall. Do the same thing with high-speed rail in California. Maybe someone has. I actually haven't looked it up.
Let's go check.
We'll see if they've done that.
Right.
But the point is that, you know, to get that kind of support, people will say it all day long. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. But they undersold it in terms of the price tag. And it's tens of billions of dollars. And it's still not going to get done.
If you don't like what they're saying, then you can't handle the truth. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So I did do some research here.
All right, what do we got?
I did go to GoFundMe and see if there's a GoFundMe account set up for high-speed rail.
And?
There is not. I could not find one in Google, but I did find this.
Yeah.
And this from November 30th of last year. New Jersey transit commuters and Amtrak passengers tired of dealing with frequent issues on Amtrak's Portal Bridge can now do something about it, pay for a replacement themselves. It's not buying the Brooklyn Bridge, but it's close. A GoFundMe campaign to replace the 108-year-old bridge over the Hackensack River, we guess tongue-in-cheek, was created Wednesday by someone calling him or herself Sad Jersey Commuter. And after 2 days, has already raised $5 of its goal of $920 million. Bloomberg reports that a spokesperson for Amtrak, which owns the bridge, declined comment. New Jersey Transit spokeswoman Nancy Snyder said in an email, "We appreciate the public's interest in this vital project." Now, I did check an update on that after, what are we now? 3 months.
Yeah.
Going on 3 months.
Yeah.
Now they have raised, of the $920 million goal, they have now, after 3 months, raised $30.
Wow. That's a significantly.
That's six times what they had.
Yes.
Back on November 30th. So, so far, no GoFundMe account for, has anybody set up a GoFundMe account for the Green New Deal?
We're going to have to find out. You know, we've got to Google that. The goal, by the way, would be $93 trillion in case somebody wants to set it up.
Oh, yes.
You have to set up, you know, the accurate number. It's $93 trillion. That's the number.
The think tank led by former Congressional Budget Office Director, the so-called New Gray Deal may tally between 51 and 93 trillion over 10 years, concludes American Action Forum, which is run by Douglas Holtz Aiken, who directed the nonpartisan CBO from 2003 to 2005. That includes between 8.3 and 12.3 trillion to meet the plan's call to eliminate carbon emissions from power and transportation sectors, and between 42.8 and 80.6 trillion for its economic agenda, including providing jobs and health care for all. The Green New Deal is clearly very expensive, the group said in its analysis. It's further expansion of the federal government's role in some of the most basic decisions of daily life, however, would likely have a more lasting and damaging impact than its enormous price tag. The resolution itself, released earlier this month by Ocasio-Cortez and Democratic Senator Ed Markey, points to a major report on global warming released by the United Nations last October that says catastrophic climate change could cost more than $500 billion annually in lost economic output in the U.S. by 2100.
So there's your goal. So if you're going to set it up, $93 trillion.
Well, no, that is, I bet you Bjorn Lomborg is on that one. Well, excuse me. What they're saying is it could cost $500 billion annually by 2100, hypothetically.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you take, so over the next, remember, it would cost we'll split down the middle, $75 trillion.
Okay.
Just in the next 10 years to not lose $500 billion by 2100. Bjorn Lomborg, who believes that man does have an effect on the climate, but believes everything that the left does is wrong in the solution to the problem. He believes they're completely wrong and believes, as we do, that their solutions actually do the opposite, have the opposite effect of what they intend to do. As we've already said, when Ocasio-Cortez said the other day, I'm the boss. Nobody else has any plan. Actually, they do. Fracking. You want to reduce global warming. You want to reduce, if you believe in global warming and you wish to reduce it, if you believe that man is the culprit and you want to put less carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, you frack. That's what you do.
Yep.
You frack nuclear and fracking. That's it. That's it. You want to solve the problem. You want to have the society that we have today. Now, if you wish to go down Ocasio-Cortez's road to massive poverty and starvation worldwide, if you believe that that is the solution, most people aren't going to follow that path with you. But when she says, well, nobody else has anything, sure they do. They've been talking about it a lot. Fracking, natural gas. If you're going to move the society in a direction, you move it to where you have a glut of a certain very low emission fossil fuel. Correct? If you were going to do it. I mean, if you're going to have that debate on, by the way, this is the debate on the left. I'm not advocating getting rid of gasoline. I'm saying this is the debate that she wants. Nobody else is coming out with anything. Anything else will kill us. Well, actually, no. Going to natural gas is better than your plan, because your plan being tried by other countries is putting more global warming gases into the atmosphere, not less. The only country that is succeeding in lowering global warming gases is the United States. Why? Fracking. So if that's your goal, you up nuclear and you up natural gas. That's what you do if you wanted to transform society and have a chance in all of the opposite place of heaven of not putting the United States into massive poverty and having starvation worldwide.
Hmm.
Now, that's just off the top of my head. I didn't research that anywhere. That's off the top of my head. That would be a pretty good liberal response from somebody on the left, would it not? From a Joe Manchin, maybe? I'm going to say, or Joe Biden?
Well, I mean, I look at, going back to the 93 trillion number, I look at that and say, okay, you're going to have to put an asterisk by that, because there are things you can't account for.
Oh, by the way, that is net carbon, whatever. Net zero means fudge. That's fudge zero is what that means.
Right.
That's fudge zero. Mm-hmm. We're going to pretend to do it.
If we don't have enough control of industry by a certain date, then we can fudge those numbers to say it's not happening. We can always put it in our goal. This is what we aspire to. But we can also manipulate it in the other direction to say we're nowhere near our goal and we need to ramp up control of industry, control of capital.
To the last caller who was saying, he said, I just don't see support out there even on the left and he was calling from California, for Ocasio-Cortez. People realize it's impossible. And then I'm reading some of the polling numbers out there. When you ask people if they want a clean environment, they say yes.
Most people aren't going to say no.
When you say, do you want the Green New Deal, you're going to have a plurality that say yes. Mm-hmm. When you get into the specifics, we played the reporter that went to from Campus Reform, I believe it was, that went to the college campus, and every single person absolutely endorsed the Green New Deal. He started telling them what was in it. Well, no, that's crazy. No, that's nuts. No, that's crazy. No, that's nuts. So what they're saying is, we agree with the slogan. The slogan is great. The reality is not great. So when you get down to it, no, and that's why I stated earlier, you don't see a lot of discussion on it in social media. You did initially on, well, we're for the clean environment, but this won't get you there. How do you do this? And once they realized what she was proposing, I'm telling you, even her supporters have no idea where to go on it. Who was it? Was it Durbin? I was looking at it and said, what in the world is this? They look at it and they go, what are you, nuts? You can't do all of it. What is this? Even those on the far left, probably a significant portion, are going, this is nuts. You can't do all of this. You couldn't even if you tried. It's technologically impossible unless, because the technologically possible part of it is, shut off all the power.
Mm-hmm.
We can do that. If you wish to shut off, if you say, okay, let's flick down, let's the on button, let's turn it off. Well, yeah, we can do, technologically, we can shut off all the power. It's how to create the power and still have the society that we have today that is technologically impossible.
And which is, again, leaving out the biggest part of the equation. They never talk about paying for it. Now they completely dismiss paying for it. You shouldn't worry about the money. It's the end of the year Earth we're talking about. I'm waiting for her to say, look, in the movie 2012, did they worry about money? No. You saw what happened there, right?
If I could just be the kind of radio guy that Woody Harrelson was in that movie. That's the kind of radio guy.
We can be. We're not far from it.
We're pretty close
to being in an RV out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, she says the money, you know, the money, don't worry about the money. Here's how she should put it. What she should tell Americans is don't worry about your money that we take to pay for this.
That's exactly what she's saying.
She's talking about like the money is some kind of abstract thing that isn't yours, that doesn't have to come from somewhere. Well, she's the same one, though, that thought the $3 billion in future tax breaks was $3 billion that was available right there in the coffers to be spent.
Right.
For the Amazon deal.
That they had it and they were just going to write checks to mom and pop.
Right.
Nope. But there is... Honestly.
Mom and pop.
Yeah, you're going to write it to mom and pop. By the way,
I want to get back to a mom and pop society.
Well, nobody pointed out, by the way, to her. I don't even know if anyone at Amazon pointed out to her all the mom and pops that do business on Amazon.
Well, actually, when you think about it, Jeff Bezos, he is a pop.
Mm-hmm. Now, his mom is about to be, you know, separate from him.
Well,
part of that.
Yeah, that's why I said
mom and pop are getting a divorce.
But a mom and pop, mom and pop is what a pop created with the support of a mom.
Yes.
Same thing with Microsoft.
Right.
Microsoft was a mom and pop.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is a pop.
Facebook. I don't think there was a mom on the Facebook thing.
No, but there were a bunch of pops and moms that were involved in it, though.
Eventually,
early on, yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So everything is mom and pop.
Look at the small businesses, the number of small businesses that rely on Amazon. Look at the number of small businesses that connect with major companies and corporations every single day and do business.
What was it? Remember this back 10 years ago, we did a whole thing on huge corporations where people said, well, we want tax break for small corporations, not big ones, small companies. And they did a thing that the average multi-billion-dollar company does business with 6,000 small and very small businesses.
Right. They can't do it alone.
Right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Robert in San Antonio. Robert, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Good morning, gentlemen. And from San Antonio, hi-o. I had this thought. It's kind of a Rush Limbaugh thing on the low-information voter. And how many of them signed up for Ocasio-Cortez, and now all of a sudden their eyes are open and it's like, oh, I should not have voted that way, and or... They're like, well, I really just voted for her like a joke, like, you know, Mickey Mouse. Like, you know, Mickey Mouse never wins. Ocasio-Cortez never wins. Either or, how many of them are backpedaling who are her actual constituents 11 years ago, I listened to candidate Obama in the St. Pete Times Forum. Well, I refused to be a low information voter. I was straight off from Iraq. I was listening to the horse's mouth, and I was like, oh, okay. None of these plans 11 years ago are feasible, but the whole audience was low information voter. You know, it was like the vibrancy was like, ooh, si se puede, yes we can, change we believe in. Ocasio-Cortez thinks on the same lines, but how many people are actually?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, you do make a point, and we'll see in future elections.
Right, yeah.
But you do make a point.
Yep. Thanks, Robert.
Well, I guess we'll see.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. In the news, wow, Bernie with the town hall meeting yesterday on CNN. Yeah, what's Bernie got to say?
And let me give you, you know, people say, where are you going to get the money? Where are you going to get the money? Amazon, owned by the wealthiest guy in the world, made $5 billion last year in profits. Anyone here know how much they paid in taxes?
Zero.
That's right. That's where we're going to begin getting the money.
So there you go. Okay. So Jeff Bezos, you might not just want to move out of New York. You may want to move out of the United States.
Yeah.
Amazon, whatever happened to Walmart?
Oh, that's
remember,
so
Walmart 20, was so 2013, 2014, yeah. 2015, yeah. Maybe 2015. Walmart was the big evil. Mm-hmm. Now it's Amazon. So, you know, the interesting thing is you don't really have to watch any Bernie Sanders town hall meeting because you know what it is. Raise the corporate tax rate,
raise the
money from the rich, and the corporations pay their fair share. That's back again now, especially after the corporate tax cuts. And as we've said all along, and it I believe in the 2020 election, it will continue to be the biggest lie. The biggest thing that liberals love is how they can con. They believe they can con those that are in the lower income levels by making them envious of corporations and tell them we are going to tax that corporation to make their pay their fair share, and those people feel great because of it, and all the corporations do is pass on that cost, and who is affected most by that hidden stealth tax. This is why the liberal leadership loves this, because they go, God, the people that vote for us are just the biggest idiots out there. Because the ones that are most vulnerable, we can charge them a stealth tax, and they don't know it. Or they don't even wish to acknowledge it. And year after year, we can throw out the same thing over and over and over and over again. What it fails to mention is when you look at the tens of thousands of employees, think about this, Eric. Amazon, you think about all the construction. I passed on the way to the airport the other day, one of the distribution centers.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, man. I mean, it's just monstrous. Right here going up on 635 towards the airport.
Yeah.
Right. That thing's just, it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, and as you know, Amazon's building, you know, all over the, you know, the country. The hundreds of thousands of jobs being created. All those people are paying taxes.
I heard, and it could be a rumor, that they're building, Amazon is building tunnels under Walmarts to steal their customers.
Wait, weren't the North Koreans or something hiding in the tunnels? Or
yeah, but they all work for Bezos.
Well, wait. Okay, come on, get with it. And how does that relate to Jade Helm? Was it 15 or 16?
Yeah,
15.
15. Yeah.
Jade Helm 15. Remember that?
That was so 4 years ago. Yeah.
Oh man, that was a pain in the butt year.
Yeah.
Dealing with those conspiracy theorists.
Right.
You guys just don't want to admit the truth. You're a moron. There wasn't a lot of intellectual discussion going on our show concerning that, was there?
Not really. It really didn't go anywhere.
Jade Helm was still the best, though. That was the best because it was like, there's a secret thing going on. Yeah, you know, it's so secret that the Chamber of Commerce and the major county where the special forces are going to be have already figured out the economic impact for their county. That's how secret it is.
But see, they're in cahoots. Everyone's in cahoots.
It's amazing they're in cahoots because then they made it public. Hey, look, this is coming to our town. It's going to make us this money. It's going to help the small business. It's going to help mom and Jade Helm 15 aided whom? Mom and pop.
Yes. Well, Mr. Jade and Mr. Helm. But I don't know.
It was Matt Helm, wasn't it?
I don't know. Yeah. If you really break down that whole idea of going after the wealthy, it appeals to everyone except the wealthy. So that means it appeals to pretty much everybody on the planet with the exception of a few people.
Right, exactly.
Or conservatives. And we're a dying breed.
Yes.
Because I saw a stand-up comedian one time. I can't believe poor people vote as conservatives. It doesn't make any sense. What he was saying was, I can't believe you wouldn't vote for somebody who wants to go after the rich and give you some of their money that you haven't earned. And that's exactly what you see, even Warren Buffett saying, you know, with his appearance on CNBC, which, by the way, they apparently shut down everything at CNBC when he's going to talk. And he's going to have his, you know, annual get together. They cancel all commercials. It's breaking news for the entire session. But the point is that he's talking about it too. And as a billionaire, you know, that yes, they should come after more of my money. Well, what's the greater, much more efficient way for that money to work for the benefit of a society?
Well, you know, when you talk about, and whether it's Elizabeth Warren talking about her wealth tax, which I'm sure Bernie Sanders would be behind, by the way, thanks President Trump for suggesting it back in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it might not be a talk today. He's the one that first suggested it and then finally dropped that idea. That was a dumb idea when he proposed it in his book back in 2000. Remember, we were on it, and we were on it in 15 and got a lot of people upset because, well, he's not for that anymore. Well, he was. And all I can tell you is this. I've never been for a 15% wealth tax on anybody, and I didn't change my mind on that.
Mean confiscation of the existing wealth,
confiscation
which is
of the existing
paid for
wealth,
by
right.
money that's already been taxed.
Right, exactly. But Elizabeth Warren talking about it, that the true socialists talk about it, because when they talk about the wealth tax, when they talk about taxing the rich and taking 70 and 80% of their wealth. And remember, you and I talked about the 2% wealth tax,
mm-hmm.
that if it's in if it's in a lot of things that aren't growing, you still have to pay for it. In a period of 20 years, you've paid 40% of your wealth back to the government. That in essence, your government finally, even though it's only a 2% thing, as she's talked about, when you talk about it over a period of time, over a decade, 20% of your wealth is gone. And what happens to that wealth? You've got to transfer it. You've got to liquidate it. And You have to sell it, but what you're doing is you're taking a huge amount of money. When you say let's majorly tax the rich, you're taking a huge amount of that money out of the private sector and simply transferring it over to the government sector, because a rich person doesn't spend the majority of their money. A billionaire isn't spending, somebody who's worth $5 billion isn't spending $5 billion on themselves every year. It's not for the stuff for that. Number one, they do buy things, which puts people to work. But the majority is what? Invested in the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
It's invested in going after more dollars to create more wealth, which is making more jobs for more people, which is doing what? When you have more jobs for more people and more businesses making more profits. You have more taxes being paid overall. They want to take that money that's being used, and the majority of the money of any billionaire, what, 95%, 99% of their income is being invested into the private sector somehow.
Yes. I mean, I've said for a long time, capitalism is the original crowdfunding.
Right.
And when you look at how that works, or you could ask the question, we've often asked this question, but for anybody who believes in government handouts and that, you know, whether they benefit from them directly or not, you have to ask yourself, do you believe it actually lifts someone to a better place? Even Kamala Harris was saying that recently on a podcast, saying, no, we've got to help people. We've got to give them that lift. We've got to lift them to a better place. The government is not capable of doing that. The government is capable of a couple of things, a very limited role of true safety net programs for people who are incapable of producing for themselves, either mentally or physically, cannot produce for themselves. That's something that we as a society have decided to do. But that's not what we're talking about here. This is very different. It's vastly different, because the words you'll hear from Bernie Sanders, he'll say, and socialists will say, you know, 1% have all of the wealth. Have. Well, first of all, they talk about that as if it's a finite amount of wealth. They talk about that as if there is no expansion of wealth. Because when you start talking about the expansion of wealth, then everyone benefits from that at all levels.
Well, and I look, when in the jealousy and this is what Bernie Sanders sold back in when he ran in 2012. It said, you're a college student, you're a victim of the billionaires. That the billionaires are the reason that you're in the situation that you're in today with your college loans. That was the message that he was sending indirectly to them. And as we have stated, it is, again, they're selling jealousy, they're selling envy. And what they're saying is these billionaires have all this money, and you're thinking, okay, all they're doing is having parties, and this money could be used elsewhere, as if the money isn't being used already, that there's no productive purposes in a society that's being used by that wealth of that billionaire, where in essence there is a tremendous amount of good being done by the vast majority of the wealth of any billionaire, 99% of it's being invested back into businesses, corporations, investments in the United States. And what is that? That's the productive use of it. What the government wishes to do is to take that out of the private sector and say, we can handle that money better than the private sector growing the wealth of the overall nation. They say that, well, that they've got that wealth. Well, actually, they don't have that. They're not spending that wealth. That wealth is being used in other areas that is affecting. You got a couple of billion dollars. You're worth $5 billion, and you've got 4.9 of that billion invested. How many millions of people are you affecting in the marketplace by having that money invested? And that's the thing. What they're trying to make it sound like is you're the king on the hill, and all of your wealth is making it so you have these servants and you have these cars, when actually that's a very small, minuscule part of your wealth. The vast majority of that wealth is helping millions of other Americans, but they can't put it there. They can't tell you the truth of it. They have to set this scenario, and that's why when somebody said, well, how can anybody who is poor, when I had cockroaches in my refrigerator and fire ants coming through my floorboard in one of my first apartments in Marshall, Texas, because I was so poor, I thought the same way. There was no envy and jealousy. I didn't think, well, my situation is somehow related to the fact that those people are rich somehow. No, my situation was my situation, and I understood the fact that, you know, how money was invested, even at that time, a couple of years out of college, when I was poor as could be. So what they're saying is, well, if you're poor and you're not envious and full of jealousy, then something is wrong with you. How can you not be the same way that we are? Because I want to understand how, I always wanted to understand, how does the system really work? What is the best for? Where should capital actually be? Should it be in the government? Is it best used in the government, or is it best used in the private sector? And there's no doubt history shows where money is better used when you talk about a very socialist society that the likes of Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, the Green New Deal, Ocasio-Cortez, how they view society, how I view society, how you view society, how our audience views society, how history views how money is, you know, best used in a society is capitalism. Yes. For the most part, are those societies that are mostly capitalist and not where the government controls the vast majority of the means of production, which is where an Ocasio-Cortez or a Bernie Sanders would go. Because remember, Bernie Sanders, he doesn't do it anymore because he knows he can't sell it. But Bernie Sanders used to support communism. Mm-hmm. Understand that. Understand he can't say that now, but that's what he supports. He supports government control of the capital, of industry, of business, of no private property rights, because that's where you get to in communism. That's what he viewed as a young person, and I believe still today as an adult, he views as the best system as long as he gets to stay in his three homes.
Yeah, he doesn't have to play by the rules. He doesn't have to live by the rules. That's most often the case.
I don't have three homes.
And someone like him would still have ultimate power.
I don't know. He's in the public sector. He's got three homes. How does that happen? See, I can play my own jealousy, mm-hmm. my own envy. I've only got one home. He's got three. Who is he telling anybody how to live their life when he's got three homes? He better give up two of those homes and only have one home. You don't need three homes. Does Bernie Sanders need three homes?
If we have too much deodorant, then we have too many homes, don't we, Bernie?
866-90 Red Eye.
Secretary Perdue says he was encouraged by the extension of U.S.-China trade talks over the weekend.
This is the vice premier of China, and he stayed, and he was directly involved in the line-by-line negotiations over these issues, agriculture included. There is a product called ractopamine that's used in the meat industry there, and he had to learn what ractopamine was because they were forbidding that.
There also were many other issues on the table.
Poultry and beef issues. And feed grains and DDGs and ethanol.
On Friday, Secretary Perdue announced that China had agreed to purchase 10 million metric tons of soybeans, which he called a show of good faith.
We will not be bought off as a country over purchases without eliminating some of the non-trade barriers that have existed in China and make sure that they have enforceability provisions going forward.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. You just were looking at the Wall Street Journal breaking news out at 5 o'clock that Michael Cohen, according to the Wall Street Journal, Donald Trump's former lawyer, will for the first time publicly accuse the president of criminal conduct while in office relating to a hush money payment to a porn star, a person familiar with his planned testimony before Congress has said. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. He will appear before the House Oversight Committee. He's also going to appear. There's 3 days that he's going to appear. Tuesday and Thursday are going to be behind closed doors. I'm guessing Wednesday is not because they're talking about it being made public. But this talks about his testimony on Wednesday, tomorrow, before the House Oversight Committee. Mr. Cohen, according to the Wall Street Journal, again, this just less than a half hour ago, will make public some of Mr. Trump's private financial statements and allege that Mr. Trump at times inflated or deflated his net worth for business and personal purposes, including avoiding paying property taxes, according to this person, this source that is familiar with the testimony, the planned testimony. What is he going to say, and what kind of documents is he going to present, I guess, would be the question.
Well, and the point you and I brought up, attorney-client privilege, when does that come into the whole point there?
Right. Here's your forecast.
On this last Tuesday of February, we'll see those high winds continue in the east, but primarily north of New York City into Boston and portions of the New England states for later today. But for the most part, those winds have died down from New York southward. Rains will fire up again today from South Texas over through Louisiana and portions of the panhandle of Florida. Along I-10, you could need the windshield wipers for a time. Those rains will extend into the south by tomorrow, but today we get more drying in the south where things have been extremely wet. The central part of the nation is clear from Texas up into Nebraska, but then we see that snow that's out in the west starting to make its way eastward. We'll see heavy snows for portions of Idaho and Montana and in and around Salt Lake City. Snow for most of the entire state of Oregon, heavy rain for Northern California. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Exposing BS nightly. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. So, as Wall Street Journal writes here in August, Mr. Cohen, Trump's former personal lawyer, implicated the president in two federal crimes when he told prosecutors Mr. Trump directed hush money payments during the 2016 campaign to Miss Clifford and former Playboy model Karen McDougal, who alleged she had an affair with the president. Now, those would be campaign finance, correct?
Right. I mean, right. That's the only allegation to come across.
And so the only allegation. So the allegation, the one that the person familiar with Mr. Cohen's anticipated testimony, so Mr. Cohen would provide evidence of criminal conduct since Mr. Trump became president, and that's a quote, evidence of criminal conduct since Mr. Trump became president, end of quote. But other than saying it was involved the Clifford payment, wouldn't offer more specifics. But then the only thing that could be is campaign finance violation, if you interpret it that way.
Yeah. Right. And then there's the manipulation of the values of properties in order to avoid property taxes.
But he didn't say that was a crime.
No.
Or he didn't say that was
a crime. No, but that's, again, if you look at the setting here,
Former lawyer.
The setting is very clear. I mean, this is, you know, political theater, because even Elijah Cumming would have to, he would have to give some kind of criminal referral. And my question, too, would be, because the president says he's audited almost every year, every time he files his taxes, because of his high net worth, he's audited on a regular basis. And we've said this, the left is screaming about his income, and it's likely because they want to focus on certain things, or his tax returns, rather. It's likely because they want to focus on certain things about what he gave to charity or what he donated here or certain tax breaks that he might have taken advantage of, which is exactly what Bernie Sanders did in pointing out Amazon and making $5 billion but paying zero taxes. And we'll see what Cohen, you know, shows up with. Later today, and Thursday will be behind closed doors. But on Wednesday, you'll see it. It will be public, and you'll see it play out. And will there be any kind of documentation? Certainly, we would have known about that. This is all going to be testimony by a guy, keep in mind, that's already been convicted of lying to Congress. So that's something you have to he's scheduled to report to prison, a 3-year sentence to begin on May 6th.
Now, we never talked about this, but he said he wouldn't accept a pardon from the president if he received one.
Yeah.
If you get, let's say you're in jail and you get a pardon. Does it matter whether you accept it?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know, because if if the justice system is set up in a way to do what? That if the person really has no sentence at that point, there would be no sentence. There would
legally,
be no obligation.
There'd be no legal sentence.
That the system really could not accommodate you, right?
Yeah, because I don't think you can stay in jail because you wish to.
Right.
I like the three hots and a cot. So, right. I know I'm supposed to get out today, but I want to stay.
It's not the Andy Griffith Show. Although I technically, yeah, exactly. Although I don't know, I mean, when it comes to a presidential pardon, I don't know if there is that requirement for it to become effective that the person who's receiving the pardon, I don't know that we've ever been in the position before, by the way.
Nobody's ever refused a pardon.
Well, that's it. No, I'm going to prison for 3 years. Said no one ever. He may have said that out loud. What I wondered was, would he really? If May 5th, the day before he's supposed to go to prison, he's sweating bullets. Keep in mind, he's the former personal attorney for Donald Trump, and he'll be in a federal prison. So I'm just wondering if on May 5th that the president pardoned him, if he would change his mind all of a sudden. The theater that will certainly play out tomorrow, Wednesday, during the open testimony. I'm not sure here because I'm reading. You and I are both scamming. sorry. We keep dealing with these people in the news. Scanning through a couple of different stories. I was going through the Bloomberg version, and then the Wall Street Journal version that came out about 40 minutes ago, and. I'm looking for, I guess, something that we haven't heard, right?
Right.
And that we wouldn't expect. You knew that they wanted him back. We knew he was going to testify again to Congress. I think it's a given that he's going to throw the president under the proverbial bus and say these things. The question is, what kind of evidence, I guess, is there to back that up? Because any documentation that would be made public would be associated with his case or cases, and we would already know about them. Otherwise, how is he not violating attorney-client privilege?
Right. Well, look, we'd said this way back then when the president said he didn't know anything about the payment whatsoever. We said, don't try to sell that.
Yeah.
Nobody's buying that.
Don't talk about an ongoing case. How about, leave it there.
Right. Just don't talk about it. But right at that point, prosecutors went, what?
Mm-hmm.
You expect us to believe that?
Mm-hmm.
So you expect he voluntarily paid off someone and you knew nothing about it? Really? That's a tough story to sell.
While running for president.
While running for president, because it would have been October of 2016.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
you can't sell that, and that's going to make prosecutors. That is something, because we talked about what makes prosecutors suspicious, and we talked about McCabe last week saying, "Well, no, that wouldn't make me suspicious." You know, when he talked about the president, the memo, that'd be the opposite. But in this case, the president stating he knew nothing about it, mm-hmm. It's like, well, that's going to make prosecutors suspicious because that doesn't make any sense.
And then you go to the question of, okay, if we're talking about campaign finance violation here, what kind of pursuit is there? I mean, are the Democrats so desperate they're going to go after that?
Well, you're getting into a John Edwards kind of case where the jury would not convict.
Right. You look at a massive penalty or something, some kind of fine, but it's not going to be jail time.
Now, the one thing is that was before. What he is saying is, did the president commit? Because it's a whole different ballgame if you commit it before you're president.
Right.
If you're president, what is he going to claim that as president, what federal law
did the president make?
Which would be, again, a campaign finance law, but you've already won the election. Is it still a campaign finance violation? Because what else could it be with Clifford? If it relates to Clifford and he was president And that's what Cohen's saying. What could it possibly be?
Right.
Except a campaign finance violation while you're president?
Which I guess it could be, because there is money. There would be money.
Yeah, I guess
some money left
right.
in the war chest. Right. And okay. if you used any of that money for personal use, then yes. Yeah. But I think it all points to that.
Well, was there another payment? Is that what he's trying to say? There was a payment while he was president, too?
Well, my question. Are we talking about, like, the reimbursement thing, that whole part of it? Because, remember, they're saying that...
By the way, Stephanie Clifford is Stormy Daniels, for people that don't know. I'm sorry. I'm just using her regular people.
And the reimbursement side of it. You know, it was, okay, but then it was, the president was aware, but he reimbursed over a period of months.
Oh, okay.
And then, okay, where did that money come from? And was that funneled through or paid out of war chest or something? I don't know.
Okay,
I'm just guessing.
Well, that would be another guess. It relates to Clifford. Well, so it wasn't payments to her. It was to pay you back for paying her.
Right.
And that's what you're going to claim is the somehow campaign violation, because that's a in-kind whatever.
Right. Right, yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, that it benefited you, right. And you made that out of your own pocket, and you can't do that without reporting it. Yeah. Well, and I think, too, when you get into the other allegations of manipulating his net worth in order to avoid property taxes, you're getting on to some other charges that would, I would think, have to come with some kind of documentation. And my question is, all right, how much of that is tied to activity that actually involved the lawyer? Because if the lawyer is involved in illegal activity along with the client, then in certain cases, the attorney-client privilege doesn't necessarily apply.
All that would be pre-presidential, though.
Well, that would, and also, I... Yeah, that would, well, and I think they're probably lumping all of that together. Just trying to, I guess, figure out what in the world it could be. Because if you're talking about that, are you talking about local property taxes that you're paying here, what you're reporting to the state, and what didn't he report, and where's the documentation that information was?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, but you're right. I don't know. I'm thinking corporate property taxes, but he was his personal lawyer. It was his personal property taxes he's talking about. I'm sorry, I was on a completely different...
Right, yeah. It would be the property that he owns.
Okay.
Yeah, his property. So then it would be, you know, I mean, that would get down to, you know, I don't know how many different properties he owns, but if he's talking about the manipulation of his net worth in order to get some kind of benefit on his property taxes, that means that he filed falsely.
That would be tax fraud at that point. Is that what he's accusing him of? He didn't say, nowhere in the article does it say, and again, you've got to parse between all these words here. He didn't say tax fraud. And the only crime that's being talked about seems like it's some kind of campaign finance violation. By the way, we're not accusing the president of anything. We're simply saying what the Wall Street Journal is saying Michael Cohen is going to testify on.
Yeah, including so that, again, from the Wall Street Journal, that he'll testify that Mr. Trump at times inflated or deflated his net worth for business and personal purposes, including avoiding paying property taxes.
What does that mean?
Well, and which would also mean that there is documentation associated with that claim.
Does that mean illegally avoiding property taxes?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're stating something that is false,
I'm sorry. I'm going by I have to go by the words because of the way that lawyers work.
Mm-hmm.
The only crime that because they don't say crime, that, and so I'm just reading that again. The only crime they're talking about is the one for the that involves Stormy Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one crime, and they say things like, he inflated or deflated his net worth for business or personal purposes, including avoiding paying property taxes. Is a lawyer specifically saying he committed a crime? Or what? Did he commit Is a lawyer going to state he committed tax fraud? I guess that's my point.
Inflated or deflated would be what that points to falsification.
Right. They don't say it, though.
Well,
that would be my question. When it comes to the crime, they only state one crime here. That would be my question as a reporter.
Because it's not relevant.
Right. Are you stating he committed a crime or... Well, a lot of it's relevant because I'm saying it's relevant to Democrats because Democrats want to know whether he is stating whether his publicly stated net worth is what his net worth actually is. That's of concern to them.
Mm-hmm.
Did he have any dealing with the Russians, even if they were legal? Mm-hmm. They seem to be concerned there. I'm just trying to parse through the words. I have no idea.
Right. So, I guess we'll find out more tomorrow.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Cold weather can be tough on diesel engines, causing fuel to gel and clog up filters. Stay prepared this winter with the proper fuel additives for your truck. Adding a cold weather additive to your maintenance routine is the easiest way to prevent fuel gelling. Diesel fuel is full of paraffin wax, an element designed to improve your fuel's viscosity and lubrication properties. The lower the temperature outside, the faster the paraffin wax in your fuel will gel up. This can lead to clogged fuel filters or fuel that is too solid to flow. Shop shelves are full of different fuel additives, but the one you need to keep an eye out for is a cold weather additive to help fight fuel gelling this winter. Stop into a TA truck service near you to shop our selection of cold weather additives today.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. It will be interesting to see how that story, if the Wall Street Journal has it, you're going to have a ton of other stories come out, source stories, on what Cohen might say about the president when he testifies before Congress.
Right.
What his allegations may be. And you and I are just going through it during the break here, and we're like, on the tax thing.
Doesn't make sense.
No, right. We'll talk more about it on tomorrow's show.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.